Then we'll play games together. We have two more storytellers tonight, starting with a woman who was on our show last month, our 6th anniversary show. She's probably getting tired of us at this point, but I know we're not tired of her. She is a great improviser. She runs a show called The Strange Hour. She runs a show called Bring Your Own Diary, where people improvise scenes based on diary readings, which is very, very good. Please welcome Ashley Keenan.
Are you tired of us yet, Ashley?
No?
Okay. Not yet.
The
one
handshake.
More.
Okay, so for those of you who may be fearing the future, feeling a little bit of discomfort, I have a piece written by one of the 826 kids that will hopefully bring you some peace. I read it and it really touched me. It reminded me that love isn't a lesson, it's something you're born with and you lose. So hopefully this makes you feel more happy. Okay, this is by David R. It's called Coming Out. I remember when I came out to my parents, friends, and teachers. The moment wasn't easy, yet I did it. I remember it was late afternoon, and I had told my parents that I had something to tell them. I remember my little brother and sister play fighting in a room far away. I sat down at the kitchen table. It was just my mom, dad, and me. I looked at them, but the fear of being pushed away made me look down. 7 minutes passed, and it was all quiet until I got up and headed to my room. I took a deep breath. I could hear mumbling in the kitchen. I could smell hot tea all the way up in my room. I stepped out and told my parents, "I'm gay!" I was thinking that they would not be accepting of it. I walked away. But as I did, they said, "We love you no matter who you are. We love you because you're you." My life in that moment changed. The only thing that was left for me to do was tell my friends. So the week we got back to school, I told them. It was early in the morning. I was in class. I told my best friend, Abraham, first. Then I asked if he could help me. Abraham is gay, too. I remember the exact words he said. He smiled at me with this perfect smile and his green eyes. "Don't worry, David. I'm going to help you. I won't leave you alone on this. You deserve to be who you are." I heard other people talking and gossiping throughout the day, but I kept on going. That afternoon, Abraham helped me tell people. I will never forget these moments because everyone was so supportive and understanding. I couldn't ask for more. "Don't worry, we support you. I got your back." I felt so happy and with a whole new life. Everyone was there with me in this moment. I did it because I was proud of it. So I was known for who I was. I kept living my life because the world kept moving. So I did too. That is our future. Okay, so I have a piece for you that's a downer, because that's what I do. and I'm going to just jump right to it, but I apologize, it's going to be a little choppy. I've been trying to write it for about 5 years, and I get really angry every time, so it's going to be kind of a mess. Okay. 5 years ago, I met a woman who had changed my life forever. At the time, I was a care manager, the person who handles non-clinical evaluations, schedules direct care, and at its most basic core, serves as an advocate for the elderly. I was 25, eager, and completely underqualified for what was about to happen. Late one afternoon in August, I got a call from Singapore. Through several clicks and cracks, I finally heard a young woman say, "I'm not sure if this is the right place. My mom has Parkinson's, and I need someone to check on her. I need an extra set of eyes and ears." She didn't want to accuse anyone, but her voice was tepid, and in elder care, the words "extra eyes and ears" cannot be mistaken. Something wasn't right. 20 minutes later, I arrive at a skilled nursing facility that seems built for brochures. It's nestled among blooming marigolds and 100-year-old trees. On the way in, I pass a CNA laughing in the sun with her patient. The lobby is honey-colored and warm, and I'm quickly greeted by a sunny-haired receptionist who's good at small talk and eager to please. My heart softened for a moment. Maybe this was one of the good places. Maybe I'd get to make a pleasant call to a family for once. Things begin to change as I progress down the hallway. The sounds of the oldies playing in the reception slowly fade to a sustained metallic hum. The lights shift to blue, and the staff appear in two parallel speeds. One are sprinting, and some are bumbling along with tight shoulders and heads tucked into their chests. I feel like I'm walking through a stroke. The elevator dings and I shimmy into the tightly packed car alongside a custodian, two seniors and a nurse. The faux wood paneling makes the face feel claustrophobic, begging for air. Finally, I arrive at her door. I knock before entering Mrs. Novak's room. And I should say, I changed some of the details to respect her privacy. I knock before entering Mrs. Novak's room. No answer. I gently push the door open and walk in. On the bed closest to me is a frail woman in her mid-80s. Her legs are extended straight up in the air, protective briefs that were so saturated they had begun to melt away from her thighs. The starched white sheets underneath her buttocks were marked with rings of old urine, marking the minutes and hours since she had been last changed. Her neighbor in the bed next to her sits up and says, "She never says anything, you know." She pointed at the bed across from her. "She just lays there like some kind of slow person, but I guess they take all types here. I'm leaving soon, though. I just had rehab for my knees." She pulls up her blue gown and shows the stitches. "Well, I hope you have a safe recovery, then," I say with a pinched smile. "Hi, Mrs. Novak," I said, walking to her bed. "Your daughter asked me to come visit with you. How are you doing today?" Her jaw moved in circles, but no sound came out. "Mrs. Novak, I see that your legs are in the air. Are you doing this to get a good stretch, or is there another meaning to it?" Her eyebrows shut up, and she threw her body toward me, speechless. Her eyes locked mine, and she rocked back and forth. I put my hand on hers. "Mrs. Novak, are you trying to communicate something by raising your eyebrows?" She hurled her body toward me and blinked. "Okay, I understand," I said. "From now on, you can raise your eyebrows to say yes, and if you want to say no, you can look away, okay?" She arched her eyebrows high on her head and began thrashing against the bed. This is not the woman her daughter told me about. She visited just 3 weeks ago. They went to the theater, they laughed, and went for walks. The woman in front of me looked like a skeleton wrapped in broken latex. Her hospital gown was scalloped around her chest, exposing a G-tube protruding from her stomach. "Mrs. Novak, would you mind if I adjust your gown? You look uncomfortable." Again, her eyes light up. She grasped my fingers in her hand until they turned white. Using my free hand, I pulled her gown to cover her waist. Just then, a needleless syringe shook free from her side and hit the bed. And there was more trash, too, medicinal cup crusted with orange nutrients, and a sheath of old bandages came out from under her blanket. My heart dropped like an anchor. I'd never seen anything like this before. I took a minute to survey the room. The phone was off the hook, and there was medical-grade garbage scattered on the bureau. "Would you mind if I clean some of this up?" I asked. Mrs. Novak's eyebrows became crescents on her forehead. "Well, that's all on her side of the room," the roommate chimed in. "That's all her mess. I keep my space tidy." The woman patted her freshly made bed with a smile. I collected the debris from her bed and the floor and brushed her hair from her face. "Mrs. Novak, I'm going to get a staff member to help change you, and then we can talk a bit more if that's okay." She began kicking her legs against the bed as I left. I chased down a nurse, and 30 minutes later, a CNA arrived to help clean her up. Weeks went by like this. I was only supposed to visit once every 90 days, but I found myself in her room after work, on lunch break, and on weekends. I'd like to believe that I became so devoted to her out of the sheer recognition of her need for humanity. But the reality was I saw myself in her. I felt alone with her. Eventually, Mrs. Novak began attempting to take her own life. Each day, she would rip out her G-tube and be rushed to the hospital. And each time I'd show up at the ER and explain that she had a DNR, a do not resuscitate, and that this wasn't an accident, before being pushed aside by the hospital staff. Finally, one day, I was called to the ER, and I found Mrs. Novak with mittens bound around her hands so she couldn't grip the tube. "I'm sorry," I told her. I took out some lavender oil and rubbed it on her temples. "Mrs. Novak, I just want to make sure I understand so I can help you better. Are you doing this on purpose?" She hammered her legs against the bed and met my eyes with a stare of desperation. "Are you trying to kill yourself?" Her eyebrows stood high on her head, and she made an unblinking plea with me. "I understand. I'll do everything I can," I said. Just then, the doctor emerges with tools to put her G-tube back in. "Hi, I just wanted to reaffirm that Mrs. Novak has a DNR. Are you her daughter?" "No, I'm her care manager and her friend." "Well, I'm sorry. She doesn't have the bracelet on, and I can't follow any directives without proper documentation." "She's in a skilled nursing facility just up the street. They have it on file." "I'm sorry, but I really can't do anything about it unless the hospital has it present at this moment." Two nurses swipe through the curtain. "We'll grab her legs," they say. The doctor presses a tube against her stomach. as the nurses hold her down. Suddenly, she begins flailing with all her might. Her foot knocked against the nurse's face, and her hand swiped over her stomach so she can push away the doctor. "Secure her arms," he shouted. The nurses dropped her legs and bound her arms instead. "I'm so sorry, Mrs. Novak. I'm so sorry," I said. Her legs kept firing against the bed as the doctor struggled with the tube. "Grab her legs," he said, pointing at me. "Grab her legs or she could really be hurt." In a panic, I held her legs down, and she began shaking, her head no and pounding it against the bed. "I'm so sorry," I cried. In 5 minutes, the procedure was done. After her fifth attempt, she moved to an advanced care facility in my neighborhood. I visited with her as much as I could. Finally, on her 85th birthday, I decided to give her a surprise party. I hired a classical guitarist to play Spanish love songs, and I brought in pastels and charcoal so we could draw together. I gave her a gentle massage with essential oils, did her makeup, and we began to sketch as the soft, sweet sounds of romanza filled the room. She lifted her finger and played conductor for a moment, and then took the charcoal and drew a long black mark across the page. I handed her a blue pastel, and she made two wobbly loops in the shape of a lily. When I left that day, my heart was full. I kissed her forehead and promised to check in on her the next day. The next morning, I arrived at work full of sunshine and optimism, thinking I could still make a difference. Then my boss came in and told me that she passed in the night. For years, I've carried her story with me like a shadow sewn to my skeleton. I can't stop thinking about it when I'm on the train, when I'm rushing to work. I think about her on holidays and when I have long bouts of depression. For several years, I was haunted by her ending. I was bound with should-haves and could-haves, but finally I realized that her memory could not be served by inaction. With self-pity and anger, I decided to put my remorse into action. In 2015, I began volunteering with an organization called Little Brothers Friends of the Elderly. This organization provides meals, companionship, and a sense of belonging to isolated seniors. This organization is more than eyes and ears. They are hearts and hands. They're community builders. They are light for those left in the shadows. They are a voice, sung in chorus. You are seen, you are heard, you matter, and you belong. I wonder if things would have been different if she'd heard that message. You belong. You belong. Thank you.
That's what's in, everybody. Wow, wow, wow. All right.